exercise is one of the key components to staying well. It's because of the endorphin hit that we get, right? Now, when I'm not well, my partner, all she has to do is say, go for a run. Go out and hit the bag. And I'm like, be quiet, I've just had a bad day, you don't understand. Okay, go for a run and come back and talk to me then. All right, and I come back in tears going, how long was I like that for? We think we're the best poker players in the world because we're hiding it from everyone else, but really, we're taking it out on everyone else and are lying to ourselves about it.
That's author, speaker, and activist Joe Williams. And this is part two of episode 272 of the Yoshi Ginsberg podcast. Welcome to the Osher Ginsberg podcast. I'm Osher Ginsberg. This is part two of my conversation with author, speaker, and activist Joe Williams. If you haven't heard part one, you should go back and listen to part one because it's really good. And part two won't make much sense. It's really worth it. Go on, I'll wait. Okay, well, they're gone. Let's get on with part two. I hope you're doing well this week. I hope everything's all right. We're midweek. I should really check in with you. Something happened the other day. I did write about it on Instagram, but I wanted to talk about it a bit more. If you've been coming to any of the live gigs I've been doing, I've been talking quite openly about it. I'm kind of struggling a little bit with sleeping at the moment, and it's been a bit rough. And the other day, I think I only got about 4 hours. It was no good, no good at all. And so I woke up and I had just the anxiety dread blanket, you know, wet and cold just on my body, heavy all day. And it was really hard. I managed to do a podcast in the middle of the day, connected with a really interesting person, had a really great conversation, felt a bit better. But as soon as that person was gone, it was back. And I was just kind of dragging it around. Like, it was literally like, you know, you've washed the big feather doona and it's a cold day and it's wrapped around you and you're just kind of dragging this heavy, wet, cold thing around and it was weighing me down. And I was like, the only thing I know to do, the only thing that I know to do right now is to go and exercise, is to go and get on my bike. That's the only thing that works. And I did not want to do it. It's not like when I used to be able to run, can't run anymore, but when I used to be able to run, you just put on some shoes and go. When you get a bike, you've got to, you know, get your bloody bike trousers on and your little Lycra bike shirt and find your special bike shoes, and then you've got to put your helmet and your sunglasses and find the front light, then find the back light. Are they charged? Oh, my God, I forgot to charge them. Which are the ones that are charged? Do I have the fitting for that? Anyway, I finally got on the bike and I didn't want to do it. I did not want to do it. It was coming up to 5 o'clock. I had to be somewhere at 6:30. I'm like, man, I do not want to do this. Got on the bike, just started riding. And I timed it because I have a little GPS thing on the bike computer. 22 minutes it took from when I started riding. 22 minutes it took for that heavy, wet blanket of dread to just lift off. And I was listening to a podcast at the time. I just paused the podcast and I kept riding and I was like, do not forget that this happens. I even said it out loud. It would have been weird. You watched me fly by it, you know, 25 k's an hour. Like saying out loud, do not forget this happens. Do not forget that the mental state you were in is not a permanent state, that you can change mental states, that you have the power to move your body in a certain way that will change the way your brain feels, change the way your mood is. And I just kind of just really kind of drilled that into my head because it bloody works. I felt better. I felt better. And I rode for about another half hour. It was great. I just have to remember, I just got to remember that even when I do not want to move, that's even more reason, just go and do it because I know it works. I know it works. And so, yeah, I felt a shitload better, that's for sure. I had a great evening. It was all right. And I even managed 6 hours sleep that night. So there you go. It's a 20% rise, 50% rise. Yeah, 50% rise. Good. I'll take those metrics. That's good for me. Oh, man. I hope that you're doing all right. And, you know, if you haven't already, there's some live shows coming up, Canberra, Wollongong and the Gold Coast in April. And I'd really love to see you. I'd love you to, you know, if you could make it along to the gig. Tickets are at oshaginsburg.com. It'll be me. It'll be Mike. We'll be telling stories and singing songs. It'll be a lot of fun.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, so here's the real reason that you came here today. Part two of my conversation with Joe Williams. If you haven't heard part one, please go back and listen to part one, because none of this will make sense otherwise. Where we left off, Joe was discussing how he first got into the NRL, the massive big national rugby league competition that we have here in Australia. And he was quite young when it happened, and we'll pick things up from there.
I was born with good genes. You know, my mum was a state swimmer. My dad was, good at anything he did. And I was just lucky that I had some ability as a sporting kid. You know, my older brother, who's my father's not his son. My older brother was 1,000 times better rugby league player than me, but he just didn't have the desire to go on to another level. People ask my dad, who is better out of Joe and Mike? And dad's like, don't even embarrass Michael by putting him in the same sentence, man. and again, he broke his neck at 18 and wasn't allowed to play anymore. And, you know, so it's one of those things. But I signed my first NRL scholarship contract at 13, and I was getting a bit of attention by, you know, from NRL clubs and so forth. And then I was playing against men in the men's competition at 13 and 14. And from a fairly young age, I started to realise that I had some ability as a sporting player, but, you know, some other things derailed that throughout my life as well.
There's a great photo in your book, The Enemy Within. There's a great photo of you. It looks like you're either accepting a check or shaking a hand or getting given a jersey by Arthur Beetson, like the first captain of the Queensland State of Origin team is having this moment with you.
Arthur Beetson, you know, my dad lived with Beetso. So when my dad played in the Winfield Cup, he lived with Arthur. So I was a 2 and 3 year old. My brother always laughs at it now because Arthur had this pink velvet lounge.
Of course you did.
Of course you did back in the mid-80s, right? This pink, beautiful velvet lounge, right? And a young Joe at, 2 and 3 year old decided to draw on it with permanent marker. do the old turn the cushion over so no one sees it. But, you know, so we had that relationship with Arthur because Dad lived there and we lived there, when I was a young. And Dad and Arthur, stayed in contact over the years. And then he started to look at me. He was like, yeah, this kid goes all right. And then he started to travel. You know, Beetso was renowned for traveling around the country and looking at kids. And, you know, whenever he'd come down to Wagga, he'd sit and watch me play and we'd all catch up. And, it turns out that, although my first NRL game was with the South Sydney Rabbitohs, but a lot of people didn't realise that I actually I started with the rivals, the Roosters. So every year when it's, you know, Roosters versus Rabbits, I'm always, I guess my soft spot's with the Rabbitohs. But Arthur's son this year, I was giving it to the Roosters, the old latte drinkers, you know, giving it to them a little bit online. And Arthur's son, Mark Beeson, who I consider a brother, he's like, don't forget who got you to Sydney. I was like, I know. So, it holds a very special place in my heart, Arthur, like a second dad. You know, there's three really significant men, or a lot of significant men in my life that have been fantastic leaders for me. But Arthur Beetson, without doubt, Johnny Lewis as my boxing coach, without doubt, and my dad. So I was very lucky to be put on some decent path by those three men.
I think it's exceedingly important, for especially young men, to have other men besides their dad, if possible, in their lives as mentors. Because there are things that I was lucky to have an uncle. Because there's things that your uncle can do and say that your own dad can't do and say. You don't want to hear some stuff from your dad. You're like, yeah, what do you know? But then when your uncle said exactly the same thing, you're like, oh, wisdom.
Well, here's the thing, right, is that I was often critical of my dad, okay, because my dad didn't teach me certain things, and my dad didn't give me certain, you know, love and care in a different, you know, manner that I'd see other kids get off their dad, right? But then again, a penny dropped later in my life, my dad lost his dad at 9, so he didn't have one. So how does he learn how to be dad? And again, there's traits of me that have that I'm not the best dad. I can play beautiful dad online, but you know, there's many parts of me that isn't a good dad. But you know, again, it's about being aware of that and trying to learn how to be a better person. You know, more so than a better dad. You be a better person, you'd be a better dad, better partner, better everything. You know,
mate, no one's going to be a perfect parent, but the willingness to want to be better, I think that's all any of us can achieve. Any of us, because there is no training manual. There might be a lot of Facebook groups you can follow, but there's no training manual. There's no specific set of instructions for your specific kid and your specific set of circumstances. Everyone's got to make it up as they go along. That's it.
I like the old, you know, it was with the girl who was the non-Indigenous girl who I was with, who's the mother of my child. You know, you can't eat shellfish and you can't eat this fish when she was pregnant, right? And I was like, you can't eat shellfish, man. What did them old Aboriginal women do that were on the coast for thousands of years? Do you reckon they just didn't eat it or waited for a kangaroo to hop past in the actual ocean? Like, it doesn't make sense, right? So where do we learn? We learn from experience. We learn from, you know, different ways, different things. Now, I'm not telling people to go out and eat shellfish while they're pregnant by any means, but I'm just putting a perspective out there as to, you know, maybe people did. It's just, you know, new knowledge and against ancient knowledge.
Yeah. Your playing career was fairly high profile, Joe. You did really quite well in a very tough game, very physically tough game. What was the point where you were like, all right, I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to get out of football.
Well, you know, it was football was my life for so long. I signed my first NRL contract at 13, but I think it's important to note, and for the people who don't know my story, is that I've lived with suicidal ideation for a big part of my life, right? And I believe that came on the back of some concussions and some head knocks. You know, that's when I very first experienced it. I remember the day like it was yesterday. So I had this inner voice telling me, this inner critic telling me that I was no good, that I'd never amount to anything, that I should die, right? And it was the only time when I was free, it was when I was on the footy field, but also the only time when I was free when I put copious amounts of alcohol and copious amounts of drugs into my system. Now, it was when, after some problematic times, and I'm just writing an article about it, actually, about getting sober, man. After some problematic times of, you know, drinking and realizing that I had problems with addiction, I said, I can't do this anymore. My life is problematic. Everything that's happening that's negative in my life, whether it be rugby league's going no good, whether it be relationships at home going no good, you know, financial problems, all that sort of stuff was centered around alcohol and drugs being in my life. So I gave away alcohol and drugs with some help and over time. So, of course, it's not a flip of a coin. And that's when the ideas of not playing rugby league anymore started to enter my mind. It was like, I don't really have anything in common with my teammates anymore. You know, the only thing I have in common was football, and I wasn't enjoying my footy at all. You know, when I moved to Sydney, it wasn't fun anymore. It became a job, and I just didn't relate to that, right? And then I didn't have anything in common with my teammates. The only thing I had in common was playing footy and going out and partying. Now, I wasn't partying anymore either, so I had nothing in common with these guys. So that's at the end of the 2008 season. I walked away, and I said to my dad, I said, "Dad, I don't think I'm going to play footy anymore." And it was just before that I started going into the boxing gym with it was that season, actually. I was in reserve grade and I needed some extra fitness because I wasn't training as much because I was working bloody two and three jobs because I wasn't getting paid while I wasn't playing footy, wasn't playing first grade. I was getting paid to play reserve grade. So I had kids. I had to support them. So I went out and got a job, all that sort of stuff. I was doing some extra training with Johnny Lewis. And I started sparring a couple of Johnny's boxers in the gym. And he said, "Joe, you go all right at this, mate. What would you consider having a fight?" And I was like, "Have a fight, man. I'll get punched in the mouth. No way am I going to have a fight," because I was one of the least aggressive people that you could ever meet. So it just didn't mix. I was scared of my own shadow on the footy field most days. But playing footy kept me free in the mind. And then, you know, boxing taught me a resilience. Boxing taught me how to fight back against what was happening in my mind, right? So every time I was in the ring, you got a guy punching you in the mouth, you start to taste your own blood, you start to ask yourself some questions. Do I really want to be in here? Am I fit enough? Am I strong enough? Like, you ask yourself questions, right? I started to build a resilience. And then, you know, after training with Johnny for a little bit, he's like, "Oh, what are you doing with footy next year?" I said, "Johnny, I'm not going to go back and play. I'm going to fight." And he goes, "Righto, if you're going to make that decision, we're going to do it the right way." And he got me ready to have my first fight. And the conversation I had with Mum and Dad was like, "Dad, I'm not going to play footy anymore. I think I'm going to box." And Dad, being an ex-boxer, and me growing up in the gyms when Dad was there, and he said, "It was only a matter of time before you changed to that." He said, "Because I could see what it was doing for you. I could see the way your face lit up every time you were in the gym." Yeah, so boxing taught me more about myself than life ever has. Being in that ring for 3 minutes when someone's trying to punch your face off, you learn so much. And it's learning to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go for a run when it's cold, living at the foot of the mountains in Penrith in the middle of winter, you know, because if you're not running, then your opponent is. And I had too much pride to get beat, right? So every time I stepped in the boxing ring, I was less than my opponent with experience, because as a boxer, usually if boxers and an amateur, then you turn into a professional. And Johnny said, "Well, if you're going to get punched in the mouth, mate, you might as well get paid for it. We're going pro straight away." Oh, gee, thanks, Johnny. So then, yeah, like I had my first three fights under Johnny Lewis, and I could call myself a professional boxer, I guess.
It sounds like that even though there was physical discipline in the NRL when you were dealing with what was going on in your own head, dealing with the suicidal ideation, which is no fun for anybody. Well, firstly, I've got to give you, I know we spoke about this, but I kind of cheated in that I left Australia and I got sober away from my circle of influence. Yeah. That you got sober in the middle of that maelstrom, I mean, it's not like NRL parties are not news. People know what it's been like and what it can be like. That
is something, right? It was the 2007 Christmas party. I was playing at Souths. All right. Now, for the people who know the Rabbitohs and the 2007 season, I don't need to name, but the coaching staff, I said, "I'm not coming to the Christmas party." And they said, "What do you mean you're not coming to the Christmas party? You have to come to the Christmas party." I said, "It's on a cruise. It's on a boat. I can't go. I can't leave." And they're like, "It's just a phase going through it, you know, not drinking alcohol and stuff like that. Just have a couple. Just don't go over the top." Right? I was like, "That don't work for me. You know, I can't have a couple. I'll see you in 3 days." But I ended up going that night, and at first I was a little bit antsy, but, you know, we got there, and, you know, I didn't pick up that night, and a few of the boys were, you know, they got some respect that night, you know, with me wanting to stay off it. A few of them were like, well, it's just a matter of time. But even towards times when I wanted to pick up a drink during those seasons, it was my teammates that went, don't do it, Joe. It's not worth it. You've been off it for months now. You know, I remember a conversation with one of South's leaders now, most capped South player, Johnny Sutton. Sutto and I come through the grades together, and Sutto said, don't be silly, man. He said, you've been off it for so long now, you don't need to get back on it. I was like, yeah, you know, that was rock solid, right? And, yeah, you know, thankfully now it's over 13 years.
That's incredible, mate. Incredible. You mentioned, though, the freedom that the physical discipline of boxing gave you from what was going on in your head. I mean, I've got a fair idea of what strength and conditioning can be like in an NRL team, but what was it about boxing that helped you mentally? Was it that the stakes were so much higher that there was like exactly that, like, you know, I could really get very, very hurt here, so I better bring my game. And by learning those skills physically, I'm then teaching my brain that I have the ability to survive way more than I thought. Was that what was going on?
Okay, so there's a really, really, really in-depth or a tough way to look at it. Something, you know, people would assume that that's what it is. You know what it is, Osha? And it is something so simple that people don't realize. It's just that boxing taught me how to do this. It had nothing to do with physically fighting. It was staying present in the mind. Because when you're in a boxing ring, if I'm standing there at an opponent and I'm looking at him and I'm trying to dodge his punches whilst trying to work my punches out, whilst trying to get my feet in the position, I've got to be present in what I'm doing. All right, now if I'm present in what I'm doing physically, that's taking me away from here, up in my head, right? So the problems we have mentally when we go through suicidal ideation and even the deepest and darkest depressions, yes, it may have some physical content, but it's mentally. We're sitting in our heads too much. And boxing taught me how to get out of my head because I had to work, man. When I was tired, I had to find more because when I'm in that ring, I can't afford to get tired because fatigue turns us all into cowards, right? So I had to keep working and keep working. So even in the physical preparation, it was teaching me how to be tough mentally by fighting against the clock, by working hard to that right to the bell, by punching when I was physically just didn't have anything. You know, Johnny Lewis telling me, it's all right, Joey, just keep going a little bit more, son. You're not going to die. Keep going a little bit more. You know, it was those words that just kept reassuring me that I could do it. You know, there was a clip I did with Johnny Lewis, you know, recently, and I had to read a letter out to him. I did it for the ABC, and it was I had to read a letter to someone who helped me during my toughest times. Now I put a bit of a spin on it and I said, well, I didn't really have a sit down and a talk with anyone who helped me. All right. I think a little bit differently to most people. So I said, look, the person who gave me my resilience was Johnny Lewis. So I read that letter out to Johnny and it said in the letter that because he was after he read my book, you know, after the book launch and so forth, after he read my book, he was upset at himself for not picking it up. You know, he said, Joey, I never knew that you were going through this stuff. Like every day you're in the gym, you had voices telling me that you wanted to die, but I never picked it up. So he was critical on himself. And in the letter, what I read to him, I said, Johnny, you couldn't pick it up because you were the one who made me strong. You know, whenever I was around you, man, I was at the top of my game. You know, so I was never battling those demons because he was teaching me. He was giving me that resilience moment by moment, second by second, one round at a time. You know, that fight in the ring is like the fight inside my head. I just got to get through this moment. I just got to get through this round. You know, I win this round, I'm in a better position for next round, right? But I can't win next round without winning now. That taught me how to live back against my head, my own head that was trying to kill me mentally.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since you've retired both from NRL and from boxing, you obviously you're not in the ring anymore. I'm guessing that you still use those skills every day.
We have to, and you know as well, because I follow your exercise journey, that exercise is one of the key components to staying well. It's because of the endorphin hit that we get, right? Now, when I'm not well, you know, the boss, all she has to do, my partner, all she has to do is say, go for a run. Go out and hit the bag. And I'm like, be quiet, I've just had a bad day, you don't understand. Okay, go for a run and come back and talk to me then. All right, and I come back in tears going, how long was I like that for? Right, because we think we're the best poker players. You're laughing because you know exactly what I'm talking about. We think we're the best poker players in the world because we're hiding it from everyone else. But yeah, Really, we're taking it out on everyone else and are lying to ourselves about it. So, again, I've just gone on a bit of a health and fitness kick lately. I wanted to lose, we're just at the start of February, but I wanted to lose 10 kilos in January. I got to 7. I had an injury and a small operation procedure, which sort of stopped me training for about 8 days. But I got to 7 kilo in January, and man, I feel physically better. I feel mentally better. And again, research, not only does it put endorphins into your head and make you feel better, the more exercise that you do over a prolonged period can actually get rid of depression completely. So I tell everyone, what's your biggest tip to get rid of depression, Joe? Exercise more and eat better. Simple.
Mate, I saw you at the Yarvin Festival when you were emceeing the corroboree stage. It was at the end of the march we did on the 26th of January. And I put my arm around you. I'm like, Christ, mate, those shoulders weren't there last time I hugged you. Holy moly, Joe, you are at 7 kilos in a month. You talk like, oh, couldn't make it. Like, that's someone who used to be a professional boxer talking. You know, that's like, I could drop 10 in a weekend.
Mate, before fights, I went close to, don't worry, when I was a little bit overweight, I had to get rid of it. There were times where I had to drop 4 and 5 and 6 kilo in an 8 to 10 day period.
Oh, that can't be good for you, mate.
I remember one of the guys that I dealt with the health physician, who I used to get advice on all the time. He said, what you're doing is you're actually giving yourself diabetes by doing that. But again, it's the science of knowing what to eat, when to eat, and all that sort of stuff. I don't recommend it to a lot of people. But,
I would
drop that 7 kilo. It was just excess weight that I had. So it was just working hard and eating clean. You know, I didn't do anything out of the ordinary except wake up every day, work my backside off, and eat clean. You know, you do that, you're going to feel better physically, you're going to drop weight, you're going to feel better mentally.
I couldn't agree with you more. You spend a lot of your year, we mentioned earlier that you've been at home for a little while, but you spend a lot of your year on the road. You spend a lot of your year traveling around Australia, talking to young men and women around the country. What's the message that you really want to share with them?
Connection. You know, we talk about a slideshow, and my opening slide is connection, because that's I believe that's a key. That's the key to everything. And people will then have that judgment straight away and say, oh, for an Aboriginal man, you mean connection to culture and you mean connection to country. And no, I mean, as everyone, connection to people, connection to yourself, connection to something higher or greater than you. You know, so because I believe with a lot of suicides, if not all, there is firstly a disconnection. I'm not talking the actual end result of what happens. I'm talking the months leading up to is disconnection. It's disconnection from family, from friends, from self, from everything, from sporting teams, from workplace. If we're paying attention, then we can notice these things. And that's why I take, I guess, huge value and pride in what I do, is that I'm a very observant person. Now, people talk about mental illness. I live with severe bipolar disorder, but my bipolar disorder and the symptoms of my bipolar disorder gives me some fantastic traits that I can help people. And one of the symptoms of bipolar is someone who is very observant. So I am so observant for my kids, for the people who I can walk past someone in the street and notice when they're down, you know, and all I can do then is just say, is everything all right, man? Are you doing okay? And the amount of people say, yeah, I'm all right, I know they're not. Well, are you really okay? No, I'm not. You know, so it's just paying attention to other people. And if there's one key message I give to everyone, it's be more connected. For our people, for the First Nation people, it's connected to a culture that survived for at least, you know, 60 to 80 to 100,000 years. And people say, well, go back and live in the bush. No, it ain't about going back and living in the bush. It's about thinking the way those old people used to think, which was about caring for each other, which was about caring for the country, which was about connection, right? You can be white, black, green, or purple, and still have those connections, still pay attention to people in your circle, to your kids, to the conversations that you have in your household. You can still have that connection.
You talk about meeting old men, elders with a lot of knowledge, who talked about being, what was the word you used, spiritually sick.
You know, one of the old people, and it's not just men, it's obviously women as well, but me being a man, I come into contact with men culturally a lot more than I come into women contact with women culturally. But it was one of the old people, and I talk about elders. I call them old people, right? It's because not only their age, but their spirit has been here for a hell of a lot longer than the knowledge of who they are and what they are, right? One of the old fellas out bush, he said to me, he said, "You're not mentally ill. I don't care what any doctor says to you. You're not mentally ill. You're spiritually ill. As soon as you fix and heal your spirit, that's when you'll come good." And one of the other elders out there, it was when I started to connect back, like I said at the start, that cultural identity that I hadn't had my whole life, the real stuff. Once I started to connect to that, one old fellow said to me out there, he said, "You connect to this stuff, all your mental health problems will go away." You know what? Many, many years down the track, he's right. He's 100% right. When I am not well, it's because I'm not exercising, and it's because I'm not spiritually connected.
And for people who don't have that connection to, you know, this, you know, the oldest continuous culture on our planet, who don't have that legacy to plug into, if you, as more and more we can see, if, you know, if you've grown up in a kind of Anglo-Westernized, materialistic, pretty shallow, you know, atheist culture, how can that spiritual health come into your life, do you think?
Connection to country, you know, like, and it's how we view country as well. Like, why our people worked well and worked in one with the land is because we saw the spirit of the land and everything that comes with it. You know, like, spirit of the animals, spirit of the trees, you know, all of that. It's so intrinsically connected, is that that's what, like, them animals are like our ancestors. Them animals are our family. Those trees give us life, produce oxygen, so we got to be respectful to that. That's why I'm a huge advocate for, again, you know, no plastic and keeping things clean and all of that sort of stuff, right? Is it because it's killing the earth. What's the earth? Mother Earth. It's killing our mother, right? Mining, all that sort of stuff. Like it's literally killing our mother, which is, you know, bringing on global warming and you know, Mother Earth is much bigger than us, you know, much more powerful than us. What she will do is she will recalibrate with natural disaster. Like, yeah, let's go and get a few million dollars and a few billion dollars out of mother by mining it. No. Okay, well, she'll get you back with natural disaster. Simple.
It is interesting, you know, how as humans over the last couple of hundred years, we have tried as hard as we can to separate ourselves from everything else that exists on this spinning ball of water and dirt in space. Yet what you're talking about is the sooner and quicker that we realize that we are just one of many things. We are just another creature on the earth. And to care for another creature is to care for ourselves. We might stand a chance of getting out of this one.
Again, what the old people did worked. What we're doing now isn't. It's that simple.
Joe, do you see a way of finding a way that modern society can envelop some of these ways of old people and like, still, like as you said, it's not about going back to the bush and living off the bush. That would be an impossibility for the amount of people that are on the planet right now. Do you see a way of integrating some of those learnings into modern society?
It's happening, man. It's happening. Like yoga, meditation. What do they call it now? Earthing. Right? Earthing? Man, our people walked around with no shoes on for thousands of years. Like now it's this new terminology. Like the paleo diet, that dude's earned millions and millions off living the way the old people used to live. It's happening. People don't know it.
Yeah,
it's happening. We're seeing different mindfulness and meditation techniques now that are about connecting back to country, that are about, you know, living the old people the way the old people used to live, walking through the bush and listening to the birds whilst listening and feeling the wind happen, you know, coming through the trees. It's a form of meditation and mindfulness, right? Yeah, that's what the old people did. Just because there's a new name to it doesn't discredit what they did. The answer to your question, it's happening.
Yeah.
It is happening. We just don't realize what we're doing.
Mate, you're 100% right. The wisdom that you have and the journey you've been on, as painful as it must have been sometimes, I'm grateful that you are where you are now, Joe, because what you have to teach people is so valuable, not only within your community, but people outside of your community. There's so much that we can learn from you, Joe. And I'm so grateful that we were able to have this conversation today, mate. And for anyone that's kind of like wondering what Joe's talking about, look, I won't say it, but Joe's shown me footage on his phone of stuff that's gone down at corroborees that'll bend your noodle. You want to talk about connection to country? You want to talk about human beings and nature being, you know, together and calling spirits out of the nature into the environment around you? Joe's like, here, watch this. Here's some footage of it happening. And my little head just goes, what the fuck was that? But it's so real, man. And it happens like all over the world this happens, though. My buddy Stevie was telling us about an experience he had in Fiji where during a kava ceremony, on a still summer night during a kava ceremony, the chief of the village he was at in this kind of remote rural Fiji called down his ancestors. And for a moment, the palm trees bent sideways as the wind blew. And then it stopped. And then they went and they drank it.
It's the old people coming in.
Mate, to deny that sort of stuff happens, to deny that connection between human and environment has existed for thousands of years, is to deny. And like, I feel that when greater society decides to unlock this connection, we might just see some crazy shit go down and things are going to change.
You know, that's where change is going to happen. But again, right, I believe, and this is only my belief, change isn't going to happen with our people doing it, because we've been doing it forever. Change is going to happen with your people doing it. You know, connect them with us. You know, like, I want to get Scott Morrison to come out and experience some of these things. You know, he'll probably dismiss it and say, oh, well, that theoretically that couldn't happen that way. But man, this shit's real. And again, it's something that's so beautiful and that everyone can learn from and connect to. And I'm not just talking about culture. I'm talking about that's the way that our life is, because, you know, it's well documented. There are some difficult things that happen with, you know, within our communities, like with all communities. It's just about reconnecting people to a better way of life. Black, white, green, purple, I don't care who they are. If you learn to live with more love and compassion in your life, then the world's going to be a better place.
So, Williams, you're an extraordinary man. Thank you so much for your time today, brother.
Pleasure, man.
So good. Oh, and Clint Hill sends his love.
Good man, Clint.
He's a good man. He's doing that. He's doing that.
I ain't doing a session with him anytime soon, but I need one. I need one.
I'm doing like twice a week with him at the moment. I've never deliberately wanted to put on muscle. I've only ever wanted to pull fat off. But mate, this cat he's showing me. Yeah. He's showing me. He knows what he's doing. Mate, you're a superman. Joe, I'm at your service. Whatever you need, mate, you just let me know. Okay?
No worries, brother.
That was Joe Williams. You can find him on Instagram. You can find him on Twitter, Joe_Williams_TEW. That's for the enemy within. You can also go to his website, joewilliams.com.au. That is where you'll find everything you need to know and things that will help you find out more about Joe. He's an extraordinary human being, as I'm sure you can agree by listening to him this week. And I'm really grateful that I know him and I'm able to learn from him. And he speaks with such wisdom and he's got such learning and he has such wisdom, that I am an ant compared to what that guy has as far as his spirituality and his giantness of his connection to his people, his country, his land. He's an incredible guy. And I can't wait to see the things he's going to do as his powers just get more and more powerful. It's late at night. Sorry, I'm terrible with the talking at this point, a part of the night. But I'm grateful that you were here and I'm grateful that you got a chance to meet Joe. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to my producer, Rachel Barrett, for making this show. Andy Marr for cutting the whole thing together. My audio producer, Andy. Mike Mills for the music. You for listening. And that's awesome. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, if you're feeling crap, do the work. You heard Joe talk about it. You heard me talk about it. We're not making it up. It's not magical. It works. Do the work. Get your body moving if you can. It'll change how you feel in your head. That's a pretty extraordinary power when you think about it. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you on Monday. Until we speak next time, sleep well and dream of beautiful things.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.